So, escalating inequality, racial justice, the unfair abrogation of voting rights, uncompassionate immigration policies, attacks on reproductive justice, opposition to marriage equality, and unchecked human-driven climate change. How is it in these modern times that we face a resurgence of legacy oppression? The resurgence was fueled by fear, fear of change. Amanda Taub in the New York Times wrote, "The women's rights movement changed gender norms. Anti-racism and civil rights movements chipped away at old racial hierarchies. Gay rights have led to a redefinition of marriage. More recently, immigration has dramatically reshaped demographics in cities across the United States and set the nation on a path in which whites, while still the dominant group, will no longer be a majority within a few decades." These changes were having impact. They were bringing about an increase in fairness. This left those who personally benefited from unfairness with a fear of loss of control over their own destiny. Ms. Taub refers to the reaction as a majoritarian backlash, the rage of those who are now slightly less powerful against the gradual erosion of their privilege. Standing by waiting to capitalize are some who would turn a portion of their disproportionate economic power into political power, aimed at redirecting society back the way we came. Back to when legacy oppression could be relied on to provide a significant measure of control over a privileged person's own destiny, even though it is at the expense of those more vulnerable. Economic power is turned into political power by way of promoting advocacy for or against causes, for or against candidates. Prior to the Citizens United decision, independent political advocacy expenditures, during election years were modest portions of the entirety of total political advocacy expenditures. In the first presidential election after Citizens United was decided, the proportion of independent expenditures increased to such an extent that the traditional electioneering expenses can barely be seen on a bar chart comparing the two. Predictably, the total amount of those independent expenditures increased by an order of magnitude. What some might find interesting is that traditional electioneering expenses actually went down by an order of magnitude. Why bother spending money on advocacy within the confines of fair rules when you can just as effectively spend money on advocacy outside the confines of fair rules? It will be interesting to see what the final numbers are for 2016, but I think we can assume that these independent expenditures again made traditional electioneering expenditures appear trivial by comparison. Excuse me. Money doesn't translate directly into political power, but it sure helps. Author Liz Kennedy claims that big money in politics allows a wealthy elite few to overpower other voices to an unprecedented degree at all levels of government. She cites statistics from 2012 that show just less than 0.1% of Americans were responsible for 28% of the money spent on political advocacy. Ms. Kennedy claims that these elite few donors become gatekeepers, since candidates for the House and Senate who spend the most money win the vast majority of time Our current system leaves our representatives dependent on a tiny slice of the wealthiest few in what is essentially a wealth primary. It doesn't matter what issues matter to you most, economics, race, the environment, immigration, human rights, whatever. The path society takes with regard to all of these issues is invariably affected by political advocacy. And political advocacy is invariably affected by the disproportionate impact of wealth on a political process, as outlined by Ms. Taub and Ms. Kennedy. We will present the film, assuming we can figure out the sound situation here, we'll present the film in its entirety after the service. If you're interested in these issues, please remain in the sanctuary after the service. Alternatively, you can view the full version of the film on YouTube. The website address is in your order of worship. If you're not staying for the film after worship, please move directly into Fellowship Hall right after the closing words. That'll allow us to start the film quickly, although there may be a little delay this time. Rather than following the film today with a single discussion of all its implications, beginning Friday evening, February 10th, and continuing pretty much every other week through May 19th, in cooperation with the Adult Enrichment Committee, we will be exploring this issue from a number of different perspectives, offering a workshop built around curated readings and consisting of facilitated discussions. We'll be looking back and looking forward. We'll be looking at corporate influence, structural racism, and how people's movements are built and how they can achieve results. Full details are available in a handout that's available in the atrium. Or alternatively, you could find myself or Dave Hudson, and we can give you details as well. We are not doing this alone. UU congregations all across the country are viewing this film and holding these discussions with an eye towards building up a movement within our faith to bring about the necessary change in our society to remedy these problems. This is a four-year initiative that will include issuance of a durable statement of conscience and a number of both local and national activities. I do want to highlight that since we facilitators will be preparing a light meal for each session, and since we're endeavoring to staff the nursery for each session if needed, participants should register and let us know for each session whether they will be attending. I really do hope you join us. Now's the time in our service where we recognize the needs of the church as much as our own needs. Please give generously, the morning offering will now be gratefully accepted.